This festive edition of Brain Cigar is brought to you by Kanglotimendus, the Salisbury Animal Factory. Book now for sensational holiday discounts. Let the kids build their own real walking ostrich and look at how elephants are made.
This Christmas, sign up for a bloody hell. The shocking new ISA from International Bank of Nodules.
Cigarro. Cigarro del Christmas.
Brain Cigar. Feeling all Christmassy. Joy.
Ho, 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 ho. Merry Christmas.
Previously on Brain Cigar.
What happens if I press this bit here? Why is it coming towards me? What the fuck, Jez? What is the matter with it? Let it fucking... Jez, no!
Hello, Jez here with compliments of the season from all of us at Brain Cigar. Whoopsie daisy, get hold of the mic there. It's been a few months now since that little episode with Pete and the AHS robot, which sadly became fused into Peter's body. Not a pretty sight, but you'll be delighted to learn that he's very much on the mend right here at the Douglas Fairbanks Jr. Private Recovery Unit, Sittingbourne. So we thought we'd surprise him with a little bit of Christmas cheer.
Brain Cigar. Festivity.
Oh, fuck. What's all that noise?
He's already awake. That's a good sign.
What? Bloody, what are you people doing here?
I'll get some books, please.
Great.
What?
Great.
What?
Great. Merry Christmas, Pete.
What?
How's the long, hard road to recovery?
What? I'm going to be fine, I think, but thanks to you and that fucking machine. It's like 7 weeks I've been festering in here.
Oh, come on, Pete. Christmas. Are you recuperating? That's the main thing.
Pretty fucking awful now, since I got attacked and fused with that audience research machine. I can't go back to my family in LA. I react to, heat sources to calculate how many people listen to the podcast, which is already insane.
Yeah, the punters know this.
And so the trouble is now, because I got fused with this thing, I get terrible jabs of pain and there goes one. That's a bus going by.
Let me prop you up.
If there's a bunch of people on the bus, something in my brain reacts to that. Jesus Christ.
There you go. Good piece of kit.
I also get these horrible mathematically accurate dreams. When you came in, I was having this dream. Mm-hmm. I was chased by a bear weighing exactly 276.84 kilograms in my vest, which weighed 17.8 grams. And the bear's chasing me at an average speed of 36.18 miles per hour. But the dream, because it's fucking accurate, kept reminding me that whilst this was feasible for a bear, it wasn't for a human. So every time I get ahead of it, the dream would correct me down to a maximum speed for my age and weight of 8.21 miles per hour.
Right.
Which meant the bear ultimately caught me and ate me.
Yeah.
Which took 2 minutes and 18 seconds, which is a long fucking time.
I'm not actually... Well...
So thank you for that.
To lighten the mood, I'm doing my Noel Edmonds bit now. So, great. Here we go. Bucks Fizz for all of us.
Oh God, not man. Man, I'm on very strong meds. I'm on morphine and painkillers. I can't have that.
Shit. Okay, fair enough. Sling yours over here then. Have some water, yeah?
I don't want that. That's been here since last Thursday.
This?
That's not water.
Yeah, okay, fair enough. How about something festive to eat? How about that?
Oh, yeah, that'd be good. Have you got any snacks? Did you get any of those cheese footballs, average diameter 1.13 centimetres that I asked for?
No. But better than that, Maria, can you bring in the dinner?
Good.
Oh, Yeah, I'd heat you up a Bowie Christmas dinner. Good, eh?
Oh, just hideous.
There's your processed turkey there.
Oh, my God.
Little compartment of sprouty things. I think those are spuds. Then over there, a bit congealed, but that could be a Christmas pud.
That custard looks like rhinoceros cheese.
God. Look, there's even a picture of David dressed up as a Ziggy Santa. Look, on the packet. Pa-ra-pa-pum-pum.
Looks like Peter Perfidi's in his coffin. Jesus. Oh, how long have you had this?
It's fine, okay? It's been suspended in deep freeze. They had it in Stop and Shop, the new one, near Tooting Beck. It was wedged in thick ice at the bottom of their freezer unit. Perfectly fine.
Fine? Look, these things haven't been manufactured since the 90s. Jesus Christ, look at this use by date. This is like 30 years old.
Look, Pete, get over yourself. Look, remember those explorers that cooked and ate a mammoth found in a glacier? Must have been thousands of years old.
Jesus Christ, Jez, two of those blokes died.
Yeah, but not from eating a mammoth. One of them had a very rare ear infestation. Had his head consumed from the inside by a family of weevils.
Oh, God! God, I'm getting some readings from my spine.
What are you talking about?
I've still got... the receiver of your fucking AHS machine fused into my lower back. Oh, God, I'm getting something now.
All right.
Oh, God, 231 new podcast listeners in Derbyshire. 11 of them cats!
There you are, you see? I told you that machine worked.
God, Jesus Christ, mate, I'm in agony here. Have some sympathy. God, every time that thing picks up any kind of information, anything, it sends my... it sends my trunk into spasms.
Seriously.
Day before yesterday, right?
Mm-hmm.
A couple of retired postal workers from, like, Accrington, I think it was, they suddenly tuned in. I nearly ended up in fucking traction!
Look, I told you.
God!
I told you that the AHS robot worked. I told you it worked and you wouldn't have it.
I want to see my daughters, Jess!
You wouldn't have it, would you? For God's sake.
I want to see my daughters. I don't want to be in this place.
Well, look, you have to treat technology with respect.
Technology, my cock. Which also doesn't work anymore. Oh, God, there it goes. God. This worthless piece of shit machinery left me fearing for my fucking... Oh, God!
Yeah, okay, well,
God!
This doesn't exactly make for great...
God, I'm just getting like some little woman in Cardiff is just listening to the podcast.
While Peter's
in a
getting
kitchen.
Patched up here, we'll just activate the...
Her name's Margaret!
The Brain Cigar Christmas
Harris.
Broadcast system.
She weighs 50.2 kilograms. She's 46. And she's thinking of going to Ibiza with her friend Sue. And I don't want to know that. I want to go home. You heartless fucking git.
What a sport.
Ho, ho, ho. Brain Cigar. Christmas broadcast system activated. Ho, ho, ho! Brain Cigar! Christmas broadcast system activated! Ho, ho, ho! Brain Cigar! Christmas broadcast system activated!
Now the drugs don't work, they just make it worse!
Brain Cigar. People together indoors.
Pete, look, what the hell are these people doing in here?
Stop fretting, Jez. It's fine. No. Right? Ambulance said at the meeting they should return.
Pete, I was at the bloody meeting. They never said anything.
Shan't be leaving, sir.
For God's sake. Look.
I'm sorry about this, Heather. Please just sit yourself down. I'm sorry about Jez. It's okay.
Thank you, Peter.
Pete, what is happening here?
Heather and Stephen Foley, they proved like the most popular guests during the regular series. They're the biggest audience we've had.
Oh, Peter, you're making me blush. My bluebell's fluttering and sobbing in her cotton shroud, Peter.
For God's sake.
Forecast a warm breeze in your undermeadow.
What? Heather, this woman literally came on the podcast and admitted to driving her own father to his death.
Oh, thank you not to speak of my father in this way, please.
I'm sorry, Heather, my dear, Jez.
Wait, why are you calling her dear?
Shan't be leaving.
Since his accident, Peter, can be arranged in ways that none of the others could.
What?
There used to be a lot of wasted time with the others, trapping them, breaking their hips. I mean, you know, these Japanese women often need their hips broken to be able to defecate their babies.
Yeah.
You've seen the sumo wrestlers.
Yeah.
So, I mean, imagine trying to force one of those out of your little pink pudding.
Jesus Christ.
Peter didn't need his hips broken, did you, Cherub?
No.
Very soft landing for Uncle Cow.
What? Sorry, what the fuck are you people talking about?
Anyway, Heather, as you're here, why don't you tell us about the essential work that Loneliness Action UK is doing this Christmas?
Well, obviously, Peter, this season is especially difficult for these people, knowing that others are having such a wonderful time with friends and family.
Yeah, quite, quite.
So what I've been doing is visit to reassure them that it's not just at Christmas that they're lonely. So I pop by throughout the year, reminding them that they have failed, that they are alone, that nobody loves them or ever will. That way, the utter isolation of the festive season isn't so much of a
fucking
bloody body
this.
Blow.
Yes. Okay, so you don't want these people to get up their hopes, no?
No.
This is not where we came in last time round. I mean,
what?
There's no.
No, you. I think your memory's distorted. I mean, a lot of.
Oh,
look,
clearly. Yeah, it's clearly my
well,
bad.
Yeah, well,
it?
I'm fused with the fucking audience research.
Yeah, exactly.
Machine,
so where's your reasoning then?
Yeah, well, I objectively know what's going on here. Anyway,
both
listen.
Physically and mentally.
I believe Stephen Foley has written a story, a kind of Yuletide mystery. I do believe this.
Yeah, that's right. Thank you, sir. Shan't be leaving.
For the Christmas special, perfect, eh?
What?
Yeah, not been able to get it published anyway. Apparently the New Yorker were interested, but they had an inferno that week.
Those bloody fools and their crips.
Same thing over at Harper's Weekly and the Peterborough Examiner. Outbreak of infernos. Thank you, sir.
The obvious solution is to broadcast Mr. Foley's work here. Works
what?
For everyone. It just works for everyone, okay?
What are you talking about? This isn't fucking Jack and Nora. So, ambulance have approved this,
I'll explain
yes?
later. I'll explain later. Oh, God.
All right, okay. All right. We need content. So, what is this story called? Like I can't guess.
Shan't be leaving.
Right, okay.
Shan't be leaving, a Cornish Christmas tale by Mr. Stephen Corsticus Foley. That's me.
Yeah.
Forward by Heather Woodley in some versions.
Thank you, Stephen Foley.
Yeah, okay.
It was a stormy, moonless night along the Bay of Mavergizzy, where Madeline Palmer, a beautiful, flame-haired torch singer and part-time data input clerk from Torbay, found herself at midnight, stranded far from home after a long and hard afternoon's team building at St. Orstal Boating and Archery Park.
What is this?
Just shut up.
Madeline was cold, wet, and let's face it, bloody knackered. Having been partnered with that tedious Torquil McAllister from Human Resources, Madeline slumped. Her head throbbed like a fractured church bell. And or the engorged genitalia of the frustrated mandrill during the summer equinox.
God's name.
Jez, fucking shut up, okay?
Right.
This is amazing.
Madeline's sodden clothes stuck fast to her body, as though damp tissue plastered to the flank of a crudely fashioned papier-mâché catamaran, as she meandered along the unwelcoming Cornish High Street. An high street bestrewn with broken cobbles, discarded Gallipo wrappers, and the calling cards of frustrated Norwegian cabaret turns.
Jesus Christ.
But what could she do? Where could she go? Even the last Sharabang had long since left for the Texaco service station, just beyond Pentland Cycle Iron. But all that was set to change as she approached the Screaming Kestrel Inn. A tavern frequented by some of the darkest, scurviest knaves along the west coast. Not least of these was Big Byron Turamole, known for miles as the Butcher of St. Blasey, a man so depraved he'd openly hack up a bloodied carcass in his shop window.
Oh, so Byron, whatever, actually was a butcher?
Well, yeah, some of the time. He also supervised at Portwell Wildlife Sanctuary on alternate weekends. Very good with the Acarpus, I heard.
Jez, get these guests.
Stealthily, but occasionally increasing her speed and then returning to stealth mode in accordance with local bylaws. Madeline approached the inn. Peering through the green fly-encrusted windows into the snug, she spotted what she instantly recognised as an Asder flame-proof Christmas tree, forlorn and dimly lit, bent almost in half beneath the frankly, shoddily installed Artex ceiling bloody Chinese plasterers.
Wait, did you say bloody Chinese plasterers?
Okay.
That's not acceptable.
Polish, then.
You can't say that either. That's
jeez.
Racism.
Poles aren't a race. Sharp
believe. Yes, they are. Well, they're a nationality.
No, not that either. Fictional. Invented by Agatha Christie, according to a biographer's lodger.
What?
Jez.
Thank you, my sweet.
What? Why is he calling you my sweet? What is going on, Pete?
Nothing illegal. But no matter. This dismal, arboreal excuse for a festive adornment signified life, represented hope. And for Madeline offered the merest, slimmest possibility that persons inside might take her in for a bowl of warming broth and perchance a flagon of Castlemaine 4X.
When is the story supposed to be set?
Olden times. And some of it 7 minutes into the future anyway. Pushing open the reproduction mahogany front door, Madeline cautiously entered the foyer, kicking off her saturated Skechers as she cautiously entered the foyer, having pushed open the reproduction mahogany front door.
Jesus Christ.
She knew she was not alone. Yet her desperation for nourishment and warmth pushed her onward into the dark.
Yeah, look, how long is this likely to take?
Creeping into the now deserted saloon bar, Madeline was met with the remnants of the screaming kestrel Christmas hoedown, party favours, humorous paper Stetsons, a disappointingly rendered comedic mask of Billy Ray Cyrus, and receipts. Lots of receipts. Kicking her way through the debris, Madeline approached what passed for a chuck wagon, scooping up stale smoky bacon hula hoops and a couple of brisket and avocado samosas, then, in the same movement, stuffing them firmly into her gaping maw with the unbridled lust of a water buffalo, one that was hungry. Then Madeline stopped as her foot pushed against something hard, protruding from the blow ticklers and Sunday supplements littering the floor. In the half light, she could just make out its barely human form. Who could it possibly be? Was it a member of the servant staff, collapsed, exhausted from his 0 hours contract? Or maybe even the corpse of the missing algebra teacher from Pendennis who I suddenly remembered? Or was it simply old Tom Kubik, dressed up as a bi-curious Santa and lying shit-faced in his own effluent after one too many sniffs of the barmaid's kimono?
This is bullshit.
Shan't be leaving, sir!
Actually, Stephen, Mr. Are we actually...
Nevertheless, Madeline crawled forward toward the snug, a naked compulsion pushing her ever onward, but before her, a long, long passageway.
Well, I guess that answers that one.
Please, Peter.
Sorry, my dear. Sorry.
What is all this, my dear, shit?
Madeline, her face now moist with tears, as it was with rainwater and stagnant baby sham spritzer and chicken gravy.
What?
Chicken gravy, I thought I'd mention that.
No.
Madeline battered her way into the snug, through the perished beads of what some daft twat must have thought was a decent alternative to putting an actual door there.
Jesus Christ.
Shan't be leaving, sir!
I thought she'd already gone into
through
the snug.
Through the haze, Madeline could just make out what appeared to be the dying embers of a log fire, but actually turned out to be the glow from Big Byron Turimol's iPad as he scoured feverishly for holiday bargains among the pop-up detritus of TripAdvisor.
For Christ's sake, I think we might have to call security.
Turimol stood slowly, his face momentarily illuminated by a very reasonable package deal to Alicante. Madeline, I have a gift for you, he murmured, before knocking over the economy Christmas tree clean off its stand as he rose from his lazy boy.
How long have you known my name?
Gasped Madeline in broken Icelandic.
I mean, I'm getting someone down here. Drew.
Beneath a now destroyed Christmas tree. His mouth widened into a maniacal grin, displaying a row of crooked, baker-like teeth.
I mean, I've had a wonderful time with you too. It's been some of the things you've placed on me. It's been various. Thanks for
listening. The story. I was really, really getting into it.
Heather, darling.
I haven't reached the part where he comes at her with a gallows slice and he clouts her firmly in the testes with the Arbacatish edition of Brundisi on €15 a day.
I'm agreed.
Just please get these people out of here, please.
I can't do this.
Hello? Really? Do you really want to spell out
I think you've pretty well beyond.
Do you want me to repeat it?
Arrangement.
Since my accident, okay? I didn't tell you. They started coming to see me.
We find it works for us.
Works for you?
Mm-hmm. For what we need.
The arrangement I have with Heather and with Stephen Foley, they think in time I could be shaped very well.
Yes.
Shaped.
Yeah.
More malleable.
Do lots of bending.
Yes.
Sculpture.
Yes, sir. Mm.
They wiped me.
Mm. Well, that was a pleasurable bit, I have to admit.
It was lovely.
I've got to say, it was a nice little add-on at the end, I thought, you know. And it was a bit messy.
I do the front and he does the back.
Sometimes, yes. Mm. Maybe we could alternate that one.
I don't mind, but I do like the front.
Fair enough, I don't mind the back.
How long has this been going on for?
It's about 8 weeks, I think.
You're being manipulated, Peter. Look,
Heather, I can't make this work. It's like Jez. They made me. I didn't want them to. They sewed a gull into my abdomen.
Jesus Christ!
You asked for it, Peter. Please stop with this lying.
When the nurse was gone, they gave me extra morphine. They cut me open. They put a gull. There's a gull in my abdomen. They said it's our mine and theirs new child. I don't think it's going to come to life.
It's already alive, Peter. I've seen it.
Yeah, we know with the maggots. I don't want a gull inside me.
That's not
Jeremy,
what he said.
I think he's lying to you.
Somebody's lying to somebody.
I think it's Peter.
And I've got to say, I just want to say earlier that I do think there is an element of jealousy there as well.
I think Jerry's very jealous. Jerry.
The beak. I think the beak's trying to...
See it peeping. What should we do about this? Should we tweeze it?
I don't know. What should we call it? Call it Adam?
Yeah, but
I don't
bird,
care.
Surely.
Adam? Will I do? Adam Bird.
Little birdie.
Is he escaping? I did train as a midwife. It's coming.
Can't he do something?
Should it be that colour?
It's much longer than when it went in.
I don't know what's happened to it.
It's got my intestines.
Oh gosh, it's attached to its bottom.
What is that? Is that like sort of a tin can in its beak?
It's got a mackerel in its mouth, and then it's got all his colon just hanging.
Yeah, well...
Is it wrong that I'm getting a bit turned on?
It's all right, Stephen. I think Jerry is too, by the look. Peter? Oh, God, is he gone?
I'm getting a beeping. I think we've got some more listeners coming through.
What's happened, Jeremy?
This is good news, yeah.
Jeremy, that you are... a very organised man, but anally retentive in some ways.
That may well be true.
Something, you know, Peter has gone to the other side with us. And I feel that you have that within you too.
I think we could...
Yeah, I'm happy to pass up on that, I think.
If you have some Buck's Fizz, Jeremy, or maybe one of the more eggnog drinks, you might find yourself loosening up.
Okay, eggnog would be good.
You're warming to the idea, you see. Mm. See, a minute ago, you were dismissing it.
No, well, you know...
Southern Stephen's eggnog.
You know, we... Well...
I think wipe it off again.
Yeah.
Shan't be leaving. Shan't be leaving.
Shan't be leaving. Come on, Jez, say it. Shan't be leaving.
Shan't.
Come on, Heather.
Shan't be.
Shan't be leaving.
I won't say it.
Say it, Jez.
Shan't.
Shan't be leaving.
Shan't
be leaving.
Come on,
Jez. Come on,
Jez. Shan't be leaving.
I shan't be leaving.
Shan't be leaving.
I shan't be leaving. I shan't be leaving.
Shan't be leaving.
I shan't be leaving.
There he is.
Mother. I shan't be leaving.
Shan't be leaving.
I shan't be leaving.
Say it, Jez.
Shan't. I shan't be leaving. Mother.
All right, well, thank you, Heather and Stephen.
You're very welcome.
Oh, that's it, isn't it?
Shan't be leaving. Because I know what I liked when it was yummy.
Now the drugs don't work, they just make it worse.
Well, what do you call breakfast? Cherry pie!
Ambulance of Ass Throat for what?
For some reminiscences about his childhood Christmases. Look, let's just do this, yeah?
Jesus Christ.
You never know. It might be quite entertaining.
Yeah, very entertaining, I guess, Jez, if your idea of entertainment is akin to being placed in a fucking bath of hardening cement and left outside in sub-zero temperatures for a fortnight.
Well, they've said that we're doing it, okay? So, a special Yuletide edition of John Church's memoirs, The Architecture of Pigs in Blankets.
By Throat, the twat.
A standard Yuletide celebration at the church household would commence around the 30th of November, when at approximately 1800 hours, my late father Raymond was wont to rise abruptly from his favoured spot on the Davenport. And on hearing the opening bars of town and around, shriek in his unmistakable Norwegian lilt that the family must now be ready. This, my dear mother, took to mean that Christmas is nigh, and she would steal herself away to the useful cabinet next to the WC. Hastily retrieving a festive whistle, upon which my father would blow three times in somewhat militaristic fashion, before prostrating himself before the coal scuttle and coughing violently. At this point, father would fall into a trance-like stupor that would generally last throughout most of December. This tended to cause mother to have to vacuum around her husband's prone form, while I fashioned a nest with several sheets from the local Clarion and a mug of Lemsip, that the fumes of which acted both as decongestant and as a reasonably useful barometer for the rest of us to judge whether the man was still alive, for Christ's sake. Lose that. But by around 3:15 p.m. on December the 24th, on hearing that father had now emerged from his self-imposed catatonic stasis, most of the church family would descend upon the household like worker ants around a discarded clementine. I found this to be most discomforting, and I would generally remove myself to my quarters, where I might rearrange my 406 die-cast Africa Corps, until some kind of karma descended. Christmas Eve would then be spent in the snug with a hunk of crusty white bloomer, a serving of potato and chicory broth, and a frankly disappointing fruit tartlet created by my late Aunt Marigold, who would offer little more than a disapproving scowl as she planted said repast firmly into my lap. In Aunt Marigold's eyes, one had to finish one's entire portion due to the fact that there were starving children in Loughborough. Failure to do so generally found the guilty party forced to sit in his vest for 70 minutes in the garage atop a half-empty can of Farrow and Ball emulsion, or at least until he had come up with suitable reasoning for the flagrant eschewing of his dinner. Upon said container of decorative pigment, for nigh on 4 hours before being rescued by Mr. Harrison and his greyhound from the next village. I didn't know where to place myself. Christmas morning, to tend it to see the family in a particular jovial breakfasting mood, The elderly members huddled eagerly around Alistair Cook, while parents and younger children feasted noisily upon puffer rice and liver sausage. I would only be invited to join the throng once I'd completed the 2.5 mile round trip to replenish the wood stock, before squeezing what liquid I could out of what must have been approaching 100 weight of blood oranges. Once there was sufficient to fill my mother's discarded fish tank, then and only then could I sample the delights of my Christmas stocking, which was generally chock-full of a yo-yo, some Victory V lozenges, and my father's old copy of the Highway Code. I never deigned to ask Mother why this item turned up with such regularity. But my genial stepbrother, Michael Harvest, attempted to convince me that said brochure might increase in value over the passing of time, and that I should therefore remain grateful. Meanwhile, my sister, if ever I'd had one, would be 11 tomorrow. Take all that out.
Brain Cigar. Feeling all Christmassy and just happy to be working in television.
One of our most popular items on Brain Cigar is, of course, Father Crowley's viewpoint, in which our resident cleric shares his thoughts on a topical matter. Obviously, we'd be doing you a disservice to not bring you his wisdom at a time like Christmas, when yes, many are celebrating, but many others are struggling. This is Father Crowley's viewpoint.
You might just want to start re-evaluating. You know, consider fucking disappearing. Kick it around a bit. See how you're fixed.
That was Father Crowley's viewpoint.
Now the drugs don't work, they just make it worse.
Brain Cigar Yuletide Memories. Hello, we trust you're enjoying a peaceful festive season. Recently, Peter recounted to me the harrowing saga of his neighbour Bob Evans, the department store Santa. We'd like to share some of this with you here, but remember, this highly sensitive Brain Cigar Yuletide memory is only an extract.
I was a kid. Mm. I don't know about for you, but it was like yeah. I used to go around my nan's house, you know. I think I've told you about my grandmother before. She used to give me raw pork sausages as a kid.
I remember you saying, yeah, it's like, God, they're bad enough cooked.
I know. I mean, the weird thing is, I know I'm probably a bit insensitive as you're a vegetarian, but I really remember them fondly.
Really?
Yeah, they were like...
Oh, my God.
Yeah, it's a disgusting thing and I would never do it now.
But weren't they a bit sort of... human. They were like,
well, yeah, I mean, obviously a bit, they were mushy and the skin was like,
know,
but honestly, I used to like them. And I've often said, like, when I get to my deathbed, like if I've got, you know, nothing, well literally nothing.
Your last meal is going to be sausages or when you're on death row.
But anyway, so I got my grandmother and I'd go around and she was just really in the back. She'd have a back kitchen. It was this weird, there was a little Cardiff terraced house, Plantagenet Street in Cardiff.
Yeah.
And you'd come through the front door, there'd be the front room on the left, which was like, it was a weird treasure trove of wartime weird stuff where my grandmother had old gas masks.
Oh my God, really?
They kept from the war, including this thing called, it was for kids. Now, it's like this called, it was called a Mickey Mouse gas mask for kids that had a kind of, it didn't really look like Mickey Mouse, it all looked like a weird robot, like rubber robot Mickey.
Oh my God. Well, Mickey like Mouse blue. Looked kind of different then anyway, didn't
yeah.
he?
Yeah, those kind of those kind of oval eyes, you know?
Oh God, yeah.
But no, it was like blue and red. It was just basically...
But what
was
the thinking? Just in case war broke out again?
No, she wasn't keeping it for another time.
Oh, sorry, I thought you meant she had it from the war. When you were young.
Yeah,
she knew. Well, that's what I meant, but no. She didn't hang on to them after the war.
Yeah, that's the thing. Because I was like, you know, it's obviously I was born like 63. So
I understand that. That's why I'm asking, why did she keep them and what was the thing?
I think she just kept them as mementos. You know, just wartime,
of that wonderful time.
Yeah, well, I think I think you're probably meant to give them back, but she just hung on to them. We put them on. I mean, they're probably not safe. We'd stick on these, me and my cousins, we'd go in the front room. But, you know, we put on these gas masks, a bit gimpy, you know, but they're like... So Christmas was just so lovely. And I mean, like, the amazing thing was she wouldn't put up a Christmas tree, before. So there would be no decorations in the run-up to Christmas. And then on Christmas Eve, the night of Christmas Eve, my Uncle Tony would come by with a lot of twigs. And he'd wrap these twigs, like he'd go and go to the forest and collect up a whole bunch of twigs. And he'd wrap these twigs in bako foil and then stick them up around my nan's, what she called her kitchen, which wasn't a kitchen. It was the last room before what you'd call a kitchen, which was called back kitchen.
Did it have like a big sink and not much else?
What? No.
This sort of pre-kitchen?
No, the pre-kitchen, no, it was a little living room. It wasn't a kitchen at all. She just called it the kitchen. But it
I mean, a kitchen is a very specific room in the house.
No. But she said the back kitchen was where the sink and the cooker and everything was. But this was like a cozy little living room where me and my cousins just.
So you call it the living room?
Yeah, I know, but yeah. Well, if you want to go back, you want to contact a medium. Find a medium. Yeah. We'll contact my grandmother, and you can say, "Hey, Nellie, what the fuck were you thinking?"
Well, I will do.
You know, and
if
then
I can.
Yeah,
ever.
Get in touch with Doris Stokes. Well, you have to get in touch with her.
I'll have to get in touch with someone to get in touch with Doris Stokes.
What I'm trying to get to is that three doors away from my nan, there was a guy who became one of those like department store Father Christmases, you know?
Oh, right.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
Oh, does that not like rather dispel all the magic of it?
Well, no. Here's the thing. This is how they got around that, because like obviously there was that whole thing of like there's Father Christmas, and then you go into a department store and you meet Father Christmas. As a little kid, you go, well, is that Father Christmas? And I remember my daughter Neris in LA at some point. Both of them at some point they went, this isn't Santa. And wait a minute, who is this guy? And they quite quickly, little kids start going.
Oh, no, well, you're going to,
hang
aren't
on,
you?
Yeah.
You're seeing like five or six on the same high street.
Yeah, and they still believe in Santa or Father Christmas, but this guy isn't.
Well, that was the thinking I had when I was about like 4 or 5 years old, was that there was one Santa and that these guys all dressed up as him.
Yeah.
And it was like, you know, or even then I'd worked out like the practicalities of all this, you know?
It's like there's one Jez Simmons, but there are like loads of other people like dressed as
dressed up
and
as
little
me.
Kids go, well, that's not real Jez Simmons there. That's
Well, one of those people.
To be honest with you, I've had people say that about me, so, you know, I don't know where that
Well, you're just a guy going around just dressed as Jez Simmons.
Well, I am, you know, I mean, it's hard to argue with that.
Well, like, what's really got a very convincing passport.
And, exactly, yeah. I mean, you know, as impressions of me go, mine is the best.
So, I don't remember, like, when I was a kid, like, there's department stores in Cardiff, and there was David Morgan.
Yes.
And they were, like, really nice. And then there was Howells, and Howells, like, really fancy. I mean, they were the kind of, they were like the Harrods of Cardiff. And as a little kid, you'd go to Howells, and it really felt like you were stepping into some, like, very fancy world, you know?
Yeah.
And the food hall would have, like, weird hams and cheeses from around the world and this beautiful smell. And then the menswear and the women'swear was very fancy. And, of course, then there was the toy department. And come Christmas time, like, you know, Father Christmas is grosser, wouldn't you
course,
know?
Yeah.
But anyway, so I found out about 5 years ago that a neighbour of my nan, who lived a couple of doors away, was one of these guys.
Right,
you know,
okay,
yeah. So there's this lady who lived like three doors away. She's a really nice lady. She was like sort of Peggy Evans, that's right. And she was a lovely lady. And she had a daughter called Margaret. But I never saw a guy there. And this is when I was a little kid, because I'd be right, my memories probably go back to
what you mean
I,
in the sense you never saw a
dad, a husband stroke dad, you know. But I remember asking my nan once, like, you know, where's Margaret's dad? And the subject got changed really quickly, and there was like this whole thing. And over time, I think I just used to, and I think I asked Margaret, like, where's your dad? And again, she didn't really answer me. And then I think I just assumed he must have died in the war, because obviously a lot of... Anyway, cut a long story short, about 5 years ago, I was at a family reunion with my cousins down in Cardiff, and my cousin John, he's like an archivist for the family, he does all those like Ancestry.com.
Oh, right, all the family...
Local, whatever, like that. So anyway, my cousin John, so he knew, and he'd done a bit of... Even though these people weren't family, he'd always been fascinated as well, because like, he said, do you remember like all our cousins be running and... Nobody would ever, like, talk about this guy, the dad, and they wouldn't give him a name or whatever like that. So anyway, he'd done a bit of digging, and he'd gone into, like, Ancestry, and he'd put in that family's name. He said she was married, she had a husband, and that he had fought in the war, but he'd come back. But this was before we'd born. But apparently, like, the guy was shell-shocked. He'd fought in France, you know. A bit of a sad story to
start. It wasn't one of these things where they kind of shut him away in one room or something. I mean,
no, well, I'll come to that. Because in a way, it kind of happened. No. No, he came back and he had what I guess what you'd call PTSD.
Yeah, sure.
He couldn't hold down a job. But apparently he drank a lot. And, like, he'd been through it. Of course, they didn't understand things like that then. He's like, he's a bit funny, you know. That's what
I was angling at. Yeah.
But anyway, according to John, this guy, Bob, who was named, like, Bob Evans, in, like, 1949 or thereabouts, I can't remember the exact date, he saw an ad in the South Wales Echo, like, and it was basically a job at Howells, and it said to be, lo and behold, Father Christmas, to be a Father Christmas in the department store, you know? But the only thing was, the weird thing was, apparently, was that this was in, like, February. And you think, why are they... Yeah.
February?
I know.
For Father Christmas?
Yeah, why are they advertising for Father Christmas in fucking February, you know? But he thought, like, well, whatever, you know, he'd been through all these jobs, and I think he just thought, well, you know, it's... I've got another 9 or 10 months before I even have to show up for work, you know. So he went along, and there were like various people. And the other thing was that apparently this guy was quite thin and didn't have a beard, quite a skinny. You know, those old guys you see with flat caps down the pub, you know, and they maybe have a pet whippet, you know, these kind of old cap, you know.
Yeah, like Arkwright from the old John Smith
advert. Yeah, those guys, you know, like, and probably they could take their teeth out. You know, he might have been in his mid-30s, probably had false teeth already, you know, that post-war thing.
Oh, God.
But anyway, he shows up, and I think he didn't think he'd ever get the job because he didn't have that, you know, because he didn't have the look of
a
Santa.
Well, I was going to say, you don't really get thin Santa. No.
But this guy, and he showed up there, and he goes through the interview process, and he gets the job, you know.
Despite not looking anything like...
Yeah, and also, the pay, apparently, was like something like 3,500 quid a year, right?
What, from 1949?
Yeah.
That's fucking loads.
I know.
That's got to be over 40k a year.
It's 40. I worked it out yesterday. Current, yeah. I went online. You can figure out anything. But it's like 47,000 a year salary.
On. I mean,
and a pension.
Why would it, an annual salary for for Father Christmas?
Yeah, yeah. Which is
what the hell was he supposed to do the rest of the year?
Well, here's the thing. Because obviously you'd think, right? Well, the guy just like, you know, what do you put on a Santa suit for 3 weeks a year in December? You know.
Well, yeah. You know,
like, you know. But the thing was, this is where it gets weird, right? And this is that this was Howells, who were a really fancy department store. And their attitude was, they were like, the idea was you went to Howells, you'd work, you'd have a career for life. And you could like, and you could be a doorman, you could be somebody that stacks the shelves. And apparently like the, you know, people, like lots of jobs, like they had that wartime spirit of like, you give your life to the company, you know? And the bloke who might operate the lady who might operate the lift could end up as the managing director of the store. They might take 30 years to get there. So anyway, this is the thing. So what was it? 3,500 a year.
Right.
But the catch was that he had to move out of his house and go and live in a really small flat, like right there and then.
What, just during the December weeks? Or?
No. No.
What,
like
the
day after he got the job, they let him stay at home with his wife. And I think Margaret...
Well, that was big of him.
Margaret must have been a baby at this stage.
Yeah.
And they said, you pack your bags and you move out tomorrow and you move into your...
Seriously?
Bloody
hell.
Yeah. So, and then from then on, he had to live in that flat.
All the time.
He was not allowed to go home, right?
Well, what about, you know, I mean, what about his family? What about his wife, his daughter? I mean, what about other people who'd had the job previously?
Well, no, they didn't talk about that. Like, but they said...
Oh, my God, this gets a bit sinister, mate.
Yeah, well, I think what must have happened was the previous Father Christmas must have, like, passed away or whatever like that, and they want that continuity. And so he had to move in. They did the paperwork. They told him he had to change his name by deed poll.
By deed poll? No.
Father Christmas.
Well, that can't be lawful, can it?
Well, apparently it was. It was like back in the day, like whatever. He had to sign a contract and go and live in this bedsit.
I mean, I know, you know, dedication would have been a much different sort of commodity then.
Mm-hmm.
But that's rather taking the...
Yeah, well, basically their attitude was they saw themselves as the creme de la creme of that kind of department stores, you know?
That kind of begs the question, surely this was in like some kind of written agreement. I mean, he would have read all the small print.
Or well, I don't know. I think maybe the guy was drunk. Maybe, like, he was just a bit desperate.
His negligence.
Yeah. Well, John told me that she was almost, because of the drinking and not being able to hold down a job. And, of course, that whole thing, they didn't know what PTSD was.
Yeah.
Peggy was just had enough of it. She had it up to the back teeth. And she was basically on the point of kicking him out anyway. And I think he maybe just thought, well, I'll do it for a bit. And so I think he signed this contract. And so, but he
well,
moved
presumably
out.
He saw the fee and just basically
yeah, I think
the
he saw that.
Signs.
And I think, I think, and he thought, oh my God, that's a lifetime of drinks and, you know, he's
well, more than
park
likely,
drive.
Yes.
You know, guys used to drink, smoke park drive cigarettes.
Yes, exactly, yes.
And I think he just thought that, but I don't think he thought it through because he moved into this thing. And basically, I think the idea was it was like a method kind of thing where they said, if you're going to be Father Christmas, you're really going to be Father Christmas, mate. And that means you're going to move to the North Pole.
Oh, my God. What, so completely commit 100%.
Yeah.
To the lifestyle of someone who doesn't
actually...
you're
not going to dress up as Father Christmas. This is Howells.
Apologies to all children, any children listening, but...
Mm. No, you're not dressing up as Father Christmas three weeks for the year, mate. You're Father Christmas.
You are now Father Christmas.
You're Father Christmas, and you better believe it. And so they said you moved, and it had you moved to the North Pole.
He didn't agree to this, though.
Yeah, he did agree to it.
Well, I mean, as soon as he accepted the job, he was under contract.
He was under contract. There was a car waiting for him the next day. There's a couple of heavy, mafia-type guys.
To drive him off to...
Yeah, they stick him in a car, right?
To where? That's my next question.
In a red car, in a red van, which I think was meant to be like a...
But he's dressed up, like decked out like a sleigh or something.
Yes, kind of, yeah.
Oh, really? All right.
Yeah.
That was,
and then they took him off, and they were like some quite scary, like Cray Twins type Cardiff versions of Cray Twins. And they drove him off to this thing. And they said the North Pole. But in there, you know, it wasn't the North Pole.
The spirit of Christmas is being somewhat stretched
Exactly. Well, it wasn't the North Pole.
No.
But it was an approximation of the North Pole, which is in the middle of Grangetown on like Beda Road in Grangetown. It's like this road called Beda Road in Grangetown in Cardiff. To this flat, you know, not a fancy area at all.
Okay, so it wasn't actually that far away.
Yeah.
It was like just, what, 5 or 6 miles or something?
No, it was about half a mile away. Like,
really?
So Cardiff's not huge. Like, and they were Riverside.
I guess not. No,
and Riverside and Grangetown aren't that far apart, you know. And the flat on the outside, it's what they used to call digs. You know?
Yeah.
So, like, he's like this. So they put him in this place, but he was not allowed to leave, ever. You know? So what the outside, it looks like digs, you know?
I'm astonished by this.
Yeah. And it's a very basic, very ordinary place. Like, one room, I think, and a toilet out in the hallway, you know?
Right.
Probably damp, not luxurious at all. But in his room, it was done out. I've got some phone. I've got my computer here. I'll put up the... the pictures.
Let's have a look. I mean,
because it was like not luxurious at all, and it was done out like Santa's, like Santa's grotto, but with like beams painted on the walls. Not even like that fake. Did you ever have that fake wood? Look, there's a picture there. Look,
okay.
There's the room. Right, there's an old my cousin John sent me. All up on Facebook. He got all of these pictures, right? And there's that picture there. You see that? Like, he's there in his armchair. And I think this was like 3 months in, so he's not very fat, and he's got like white stubble, you know, which they used to bleach.
Oh my God, are you going to tell me that they fattened him up?
Yeah.
Well,
that was part of the reason why they advertised in February, so they could get him like really fat.
Oh,
so they'd make him eat like lard. Like just, you know, you remember lard? Like,
well, yeah, well, people kind of ate it anyway. So.
Yeah, but like they would like fill up a whole thing, and he'd have to have 3 times a day. I think it was literally.
What, you
two
mean
pints
like,
of
just
lard.
Like raw lard?
Pure lard with a spoon. He'd have to eat this 3 times a day. They're like bacon sandwich. I think he loved it when he first went there, but he got quite ill, you know, because it's really bad for your heart.
Well,
you know?
I mean, kill him, yeah.
Yeah, bread, just a lot, you know.
Suet, presumably.
Yeah, all that stuff, you know, bacon fat, you know, and he would just eat all this stuff. And he gets gradually, you see here, look at this picture here.
Right.
So he's there. In his armchair, which is like, and you see, like on the background there.
Yeah, he's already got the rosy cheeks.
Yeah,
presumably that was the booze. Yeah.
Oh, that was completely the booze. So, he's living in this place, and he's just got to keep thinking, your Father Christmas, your father. And see the windows there. Oh, look at this picture, right?
I'll scroll along.
See the windows there. The windows are blacked out. Imagine you're never allowed to leave this place.
Yeah, it's like
ever.
Presumably they were like blackout curtains from the war.
And so they painted really bad shit like snow painted on the windows.
I was wondering what that was. I thought
that was
white
dust.
Snow.
That's meant to be snow.
Clearly it isn't.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then in the
is
in
that
the
supposed
there?
To be like a tree or something? What is that thing in the corner?
Yeah, that's like a very cheap, like fake one of those early, I guess, a very early version of a plastic tree or whatever. You know.
God
and
almighty.
So he had to just live in this place, just eat lard all the time. And the place apparently was like, it was kept freezing. So look at this picture.
Oh, what, to emulate the North Pole?
Yeah. So look at this site.
Oh
you see, like,
gosh.
Look at that wall there. Look at that wall. See, look.
Yeah.
See those thick pipes? They're like frosted pipes on the, all going down the walls?
Yeah, that's what I thought were trees.
Like they put, no,
oh,
no,
I
no,
see,
no.
yes.
That's like what they put. You know, when you have a walk-in freezer?
Yeah.
The kind of the cold pipes that go through, whatever, that get frosted. That's what it is. So the place was like,
oh my God. So those
like freezing.
Those are actually, they're not like silver birch trees. They are frozen pipes.
Yeah, I know it looks,
frostiness of it. So.
But it's like living in a walk-in freezer. I mean, just warm enough that you wouldn't die. You wouldn't actually freeze. But he's in there and they see this ratty kind of Santa suit, this Father Christmas suit in the boots. Never allowed to take that off.
I mean, don't even look like proper Santa boots.
Yeah, and
they
apparently
like...
it would like stink, you know. And I think that, oh, look at this. Look, see the record player there?
Mm-hmm.
An old record player.
Yeah.
That was on like some, like they, it would, I think they had some, it was like an old 78 of like wind blowing, like a recording of wind.
Oh, right.
And it would just keep going back to the beginning so that they would, so he's sitting in this freezing place.
Oh God.
You know, and here's the thing. Apparently in the same building, there were like other ones.
So
he'd seen it. Occasionally
well,
he'd go to the toilet.
He was Howell's only Father Christmas. Right. But
there
were
David
others?
Morgan had one as well. And they kept their one in the same building.
Oh, my God. Well, this was like a sort of... This whole building was sort of set aside for incarcerated Santa Clauses.
They had one for Wildings, which was the big department store in Newport. But he'd go to the toilet down the corridor and some other guy... And, like, he'd come out and there'd be, like, his toilet would flush. And, like, and he
another
said...
Another Santa would come out. So he lived there alone in this digs, in these...
Well, not alone in the bedsit.
But you said... There were, but the other Santas lived elsewhere.
They lived elsewhere. He was never allowed to acknowledge.
What are you going to tell me now?
What does Santa have?
Well, this is what I think. My brain was already making the journey. Elves. You're telling me he had elves.
He had elves.
You are telling me he had
elves. Yes.
Oh my godfathers.
Three children.
Children.
Yeah. There were three children there.
So
pretty sick-looking children.
Yeah.
Who were dressed. As elves already.
Oh, my God. So, I mean, but where were they from? Were they like orphans?
Well,
They were. Yeah.
They were like war orphans.
Oh, my God.
And they'd lost their parents, like in battle or in the Blitz or whatever like that. And they were called, and John gave me this information because I said I might talk. He said, of course you can talk about it on the podcast. He sent me an email. He said, look, they were renamed Snowball, Shinny, and Sugarplum Mary. Right. And they were just little kids.
I shouldn't even
I know, they were little kids dressed as elves. And also, nobody was allowed to leave this place, ever. Like, the place was locked from the outside.
No one got wind of this at all.
And Sugarplum Mary told Bob, sorry, Father Christmas, that her real name had been Katie Moynihan. But Howells had said if she ever told anyone that she'd be killed. Oh, I mean, this is a department store, department.
This is not... Ooh.
Yeah. And so they'd all live in this place and they were kind of all quite depressed, you know. And meanwhile, Bob's wife, Peggy, she's basically like, she's, you know, her husband survived the war and she's like literally like living like a widow. And she sent his salary. She's like a war widow living.
So he didn't even get his money. It was just sent to the family.
Yeah.
So at least, I suppose that probably got them out of a lot of, you know, their consciences were clear and they were legally. You know, his family were not going without. So
I think he'd probably run up gambling debts and just drinking and all that sort of stuff. And so I think they just went with it. They went along with it. So they'd live all the time. And the kids would be in what had been like a little kitchenette area. But they called it like...
The workshop.
Oh, the workshop, yeah. So Father Christmas's workshop was just this area of the kitchen. And they'd have like little, you know, like a doll and a tin soldier. And they'd have these little wooden hammers. And they'd have to sit there all day, whether there was anyone there or not.
So not only were they dressing up as elves, they actually had to perform as elves.
Yeah, and they weren't really making toys. Because even by then, toys were made in factories. That, you know, like it's an artifice.
Yeah,
but it's the whole thing of, no, you are the elves. And you make toys.
Just to basically to make the, as you said, it's like method. Yes. Basically making them live.
Yeah, and you are not Ernest Hallowell, 6 years old. You are Snowball. Like sitting there depressed, hitting a tin soldier all day, pretending to make one tin soldier day in, day out. It's kind of barbaric.
It's beyond barbaric. I mean, how many, you know... Even on the logistical side of it, how many laws were being broken here?
Well, I don't know. I mean, I think they turned a blind eye. I think maybe Howells during the war had been turned over to, you know, they probably...
Well, the authorities turned a blind eye.
Well, I think they'd probably done a lot for the war effort. You know, probably they...
So they knew that this went on. Well, I suppose they have done.
And I think they thought you're taking a drunk guy off the streets, you're saving
your
family,
housing,
you know,
some children. Yeah.
You know, we're trying to rebuild Britain after the war, and this guy had been a drain, I guess, on whatever. But they had to live in this, and they would just live there all the time, and then they'd just be let out for like, and the same guys, those kind of heavy security guys that had taken him to the place in the first place, they drove them in this red van, the grotto, and then they would live in. This is the thing, live in the grotto then.
Right.
For 3 weeks. Presumably with these guys standing by, like going, you know, fucking no false moves, mate. You don't go, anywhere, you know.
Yeah, well, good to see the.
And they live
Christmas
in that. And imagine that, you're living in a fake grotto in the toy department. It's kind of quite unsanitary, you know?
And to like say the absolute least, yeah.
And like apparently, like they'd have to go, like Santa, you know, Father Christmas, Bob Evans, and these three poor little war orphans. There would be like a bucket where they could like do their business around the back of the grotto at night.
God.
Yeah.
Were... So
it's not easy to be jolly in those circumstances.
No, but you know? Presumably they had to by pain of, well, by
yeah, yeah. They'd signed. They'd all signed contracts, you know. And he.
Well,
you
the
know,
children couldn't sign legally binding contracts. So how did that work?
I don't know. I think they just thought well, you're lucky you're alive. Or, you know. I don't know. They just. Well, they would like. They all.
I well, I suppose probably what they did. This is only a total guess on my part. I'm shocked by all this, yeah, but. Yeah. I imagine what the people who ran this whole hideous, like, affair did was take custody of these children, and presumably that was okayed by the authorities.
Yeah.
God, I just can't imagine... I can't imagine, like, lasting in those circumstances for, like, a couple of days, let alone... I mean, how long are we talking here?
Oh, God, he was there till he died.
He was there till he died?
Yeah, I think he got... I think he got into it. John said, like, he kind of went, you know, the first couple of years were pretty grim because you feel like you're in prison. And I think he just started...
What, you mean
to
like Stockholm Syndrome or something?
Well, Stockholm Syndrome, a combination of that, and also really believe, you know, when an actor really gets into their part and Daniel Day-Lewis starts
the
believing
methods,
he's
really
a cobbler, you know, in the 19th century or whatever. I think he started to go, I'm Father Christmas.
At least there's some level of reward with that. Yeah. I mean, I'm not sure I'm seeing it with this.
But
well,
I think you probably just, you know, if you live that life, you probably just live for the 3 weeks when you can go out and just give some joy to children. But yeah, he died in the mid-80s. And he had
in
to,
this bed,
he didn't have to
in
bleach.
This digs.
In yeah, the, in this digs, in this thing that was like a fake Santa's house.
In the
house.
Fake Santa.
Yeah,
fake,
yeah. Yeah, no TV.
So he was there was no like,
Santa doesn't have TV, so therefore neither does Bob Evans Santa, you know.
Yes, exactly. You know,
so
not...
they had no idea. They didn't know about innovations. They didn't know about air travel. Because of where he lives, I think he might glean little bits of information when he every year when he go out for 3 weeks with the elves. So he say if it's the mid-50s, he hears Elvis playing on the.
Well, presumably he thought it was something to do with elves.
Yeah, that's.
Probably.
The Elvis, yeah. Yes. I think they... Imagine being let out.
God, he must have, by the end of his days there, he must have had a very fragmented view of the world. And
I guess based on, like, he would have heard, like, you know, so here it is, Merry Christmas, you know, the... Merry Christmas, everybody.
Well,
Slade,
his whole world view would have been based around Slade and Wizard and, you know, Noel's... Noel visiting the kids in hospital.
Yeah, that would have been like whatever. It'd be basically whatever he would see or hear whilst sitting with kids on his lap in the in Santa's grotto in Howells, you know. But you see, look at this here. There's a picture of him in Howells there in like what I think that's like 1981, you know.
God,
and there's like a, you see the changing fashions of the kids there.
I was going to say, yeah, it's almost sort of new romantic looking.
Yeah. Oh, look, this is an interesting one. This is when I think this is when they've just got back and they go, right, you're done for the year. And, like, you know, they're back inside and they're having their Christmas dinner. Look.
Oh, my God.
You know, it doesn't look that appealing, does it? But they're probably doing their best, you know, to enjoy it, you know.
I think they would have, yeah. That's grim. It's sort of grey. I mean, are those supposed to be potatoes? I don't know what
they
are.
No, they didn't feed them well, really.
No.
That Snowball there, the one with his head in his hands...
I was going to say, the other kid looks like he's smiling, but, you know, presumably that's under duress.
Opening their Christmas presents there.
So they actually had presents.
They had presents, yeah. And they were good. So this is bizarre. Sugarplum Mary, and she's been given, like, an inflatable, like, rubber ring like you would have in a pool. I think they would...
For what use? When would she ever have...
Well, yeah. I think she just sat in it on Christmas Day and Boxing Day.
Maybe she was allowed to use it in the bath, but presumably they just weren't allowed baths.
Well, no, they weren't. Yeah, there was a bath, but only the... I don't think the elves were allowed, because the elves were seen as, like, kind of lower-class citizens, and they were not allowed
Presumably the heavies used it, yeah.
Day, and she's just sitting there on the floor in a rubber ring. I think it's whatever was left over after the Christmas rush.
It looks like... They're reading some kind of newspaper there, but it's presumably like years old, you know.
Yeah. I think they were given a fake somebody's job at Howells up in the admin department.
Was to mock up newspapers.
The South Pole Echo, it was called.
Oh, what that is?
Yeah, and obviously it was carefully curated news. They weren't allowed to know anything about what was really going on in the world. So it's all things like, Oh, Rudolph had a bit of a sore head yesterday, but reports are coming in that he's well, fine. And
Prancer and Dancer are not in a relationship.
Yeah,
you know, this is all gossip.
Yeah. Like Polar Bear has killed one of the elves, that kind of thing, you know. This one, this picture's taken, I think, in the 50s. And bear in mind,
it's got that look.
This guy,
you know, so hang on,
that's
so
all the things that came
when
along.
When did he die? How old was he?
I think it was like in the mid-80s. I think up until like 81 or 82, he was still playing his trade every year at,
so,
you know.
So I'm just trying to think, what age, like, would he have been by then? In his 60s? Or?
Well, he was, yeah, he was born 1925 or something like that. So he would have
been... So he would have been 60 odd.
Yeah. Living all that, like, lard, because I think they kept him living that way. I mean, he wasn't going to get much past 60,
well,
mid-60s.
I was going to say to you, I'm actually surprised he lived that long, if that was the diet and that was the lifestyle. Yeah. I mean, so was he ever allowed to see his wife at any time?
No. No, absolutely not. Well, here's the thing. Not officially, but she would...
What do you mean?
Well, at Christmas. She'd go and see him.
As Father Christmas?
As Father Christmas at the grotto. And she'd take Margaret,
who just got, you know.
And she'd get in line with the other kids and, like, sit on his lap. And I think her mother had said, "That's Daddy," you know. And he'd, like, just sit on the lap of this kind of guy who had probably had very poor hygiene, you know. And then he...
Through no fault of his own.
But she wasn't allowed to hug him. She wasn't allowed to call him Daddy. And I think one year, apparently, like, she said, "I miss you." She told John this. She said, "I miss you, Daddy." And the department store security completely freaked out because they think, oh, my God. Imagine, like, little kids around are thinking, this is Father Christmas's daughter. That's, like, that's not part of the myth, you know. There's a daughter.
Oh, well,
where, you know.
I mean, that I understand. That's about the one thing where you kind of think they might have a point, you know.
Yeah. But he's and apparently they snatched her away, and this guy's just sitting there, sitting there sobbing, and just, "I just want a few minutes with my daughter, please."
Oh, God, it's so awful.
And then they just took him around the back to wipe his eyes next to the shit bucket, and, you know, then they're on to the next kid.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
I mean, on the subject of kids,
yeah,
what about these elves? I mean, you know, they're not going to stay kids forever.
No, you're right. Well, they apparently would grow up, and then another kid would come in, they'd get replaced, and,
oh my God.
But is it... Yeah.
So what happened to the original...
Well, Snowball escaped, apparently, you know, one year at Christmas. You know, I mean, relatively easy to get away.
What, Sugar as Plum, a kid?
Pardon? As a kid, yeah.
Right.
Yeah, never seen again.
And you
think, my God. Yeah.
So never do you think, again, like, intercepted and... Oh, God,
I think, you know, Howells got to him. You know, maybe he was, like, brought down in the food hall and just, you know. Sugar Plum Mary found out on her second Christmas at Howells, Christmas Grotto, that her dad was alive because her brother showed up. And then he said... And yeah, and apparently
he said she wasn't an orphan.
And she found out.
Yeah.
There, because her dad had been missing in action in France. And then he turned up and she... There you go.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
So, well, I suppose a happy ending, you know, went back home to the dad and...
No.
What do you mean, no? I mean...
The department store said no. They said it would be bad for the company's image to let an elf go. She was one of their best, apparently. She was like, kids loved her. And they thought, we've got a commitment to our customers. So they said sorry, and these heavy guys just took her back to the North Pole, i.e. 34 Beeder Road.
Yeah, yeah.
In Grangetown, you know.
Oh,
and, yeah, and she apparently was like a mess for a couple of months, but just eventually gave into it all. I think they gave her, like, a lot of drugs, like in One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest. And,
oh, God.
Probably maybe lobotomized
her. Well, I was going to say, did they, yeah.
Yeah. And then apparently she just eventually forgot her real name, and that was the end of that. You know, and I think she just died there in her 50s. You know.
Right, okay. Mm. Well, this is basically, what you're talking about is basically slavery.
Yeah. Heavily medicated slavery. You're talking about a man with terrible PTSD from the war, you know, probably waking up screaming most nights from the things he'd seen, you know, locked in, like, a tiny freezing windowless bedsit in Grangetown, dressed permanently as Father Christmas, never allowed to see his wife, ever, apart from at Christmas, if she could even get in. I think they just banned her from there, living with three war orphans, one who was utterly traumatised because she was not allowed to see her father, allowed out once a year to be Santa and his elves, living in their own filth in the toy department of Howells, heavily drugged, shitting in a bucket. Like I said, it was a different time.
And this has all been exposed since?
No, it's just on my cousin's Facebook page.
Right, well, that's just about all from us here at Brain Cigar for 2021. Just going to finish off with a couple of festive TV listings. On Channel 4, on Christmas Eve at 11 p.m, there's a very special nativity play with all the biblical characters played by age-appropriate clones of the late Leslie Grantham, famous, of course, for his role on EastEnders as Dirty Den Watts. Watch out for Dirty Joseph, the Dirty Virgin Mary, and Dirty Baby Jesus, played by three-month-old Leslie Grantham, created and raised under strict laboratory conditions as an identical replica of British soap's most notorious bad guy, purely for the purposes of tonight's show. Afterwards, all the actors will be auctioned for charity.
Best stick that one in your planner. Christmas Day, meanwhile, sees a variety of entertainment for the entire family, starting at 9:15 a.m. on BBC Two with festive recipes from Nigella Lawson's brother. Have that notebook ready as Nigella Lawson's brother emerges from the mother of all hangovers to cremate a three-week-old Peshwari naan while emptying a family-sized tub of Taramasalata into the fish tank. You'll need an egg whisk, some quaaludes, and the number of a decent glazier. Music comes from Marty Pello.
On Boxing Day at 2 p.m. on BBC One, The Queen's Speech, The Director's Cut, a rambling six-hour mishmash featuring outtakes, corpsing, a falling piece of backdrop, nine swear words, the on-screen death of a palace courtier, and some indeterminate angry mumbling from Her Majesty, sounding a bit like, bloody hell, you can't say anything anymore. Featuring an audio commentary from the Queen herself.
On New Year's Eve, we can expect thrills galore with the second semi-final of Strictly Photocopying, in which Edith and Patricio from Channel 5's Sex Prison take on the might of the Burkina Faso soap all-stars. This penultimate episode's disciplines include the delivery of several confidential mortgage documents to a very difficult Santander branch manager in Gosport. Viewers are warned that the show is likely to overrun, possibly clashing with the network premiere of Walt Disney's The Stupid Old Pervert over on BBC One. Well, I guess that's us.
That's all from us. Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year.
Cigarro. Cigarro del Christmas.
Because I know what I liked, and it was yummy.